It is Thursday, May 17th, 2012. I am Steve Gerwick, the webmaster of www.gerwick.net, your source on the World Wide Web for all your pro wrestling news and MMA news since 1997. A lot of news breaking on this day. That's why I've welcomed back from prowrestling.net, Jerry Wiseman, to help me out break it down and analyze a very eventful day. And Jerry, up front, I don't know about you, they were talking about changing the start times of Raw to an hour earlier. A lot of speculation would be that they're going to do a new show possibly. And today we find out they're starting an hour early because as of July 23rd, Raw is moving to a three-hour format weekly. What's your thought on that?
I'm excited about it. It's almost a mini pay-per-view every week, and depending on how they put the matches together, how they book the card, it could be a very good thing for them. I think they're feeling the heat. They need to turn up the pressure a little bit on some of the other promotions, and they need to present what they have a little better. And I think it's also a segue to bring in some of the guys from SCW and start integrating them into storylines, as has been the plot for now, I don't know, the last couple of months.
It's interesting because obviously it's an extra hour per week. That's an extra 4 hours per month. And again, at the end of the month, they're asking you to pay $44.95 standard definition for a pay-per-view. And of course, the one coming up this Sunday, Over the Limit, it really seems like a throwaway pay-per-view because obviously they're building towards Lesnar versus Triple H, and then this time around we're going to get Laurinaitis versus Cena as one of the top matches on the card. But I guess when I heard this news, it really surprised me. That was not the direction I expected them to go with Raw, especially with the Raw rating has really been down in recent weeks. In fact, it's been struggling to hit 3.0 or stay above a 3.0 rating. And the thought that came to mind when I first heard the news, of course, was what happened with WCW Nitro when they moved to 3 hours. Of course, that really overexposed their product. They had, 3 hours of Nitro. They had 2 hours of Thunder. We got the same situation here. And on top of that, WWE is also producing NXT. They're also producing WWE Superstars. And then the other thought would be with 8 o'clock start time as of July 23rd, I'm sure they're gearing up to go head-to-head against Monday Night Football, which actually starts at, I believe, 8:30 is the kickoff, but of course the pregame show starts at 8 o'clock. So that'll give them a little bit of a lead-in on the Monday Night Football when it starts up in September, which actually, Jerry, was one of the thoughts behind Impact moving from 9 o'clock to 8 o'clock Eastern so they could have a heads-up on the Thursday Night Football games on the NFL Network, so if they could, because actually the kickoff for Thursday night games is 8:20, so if they start at 8 o'clock, and of course the pregame starts at 8 o'clock also, but they could get the jump on the action of the NFL. How do you analyze that in terms of Monday Night Football, Thursday Night Football going up against pro wrestling?
Football is always going to win, unless there is something major that's going to happen, and at that they're probably just going to get the quarter hour. Which is important, but you're looking at basically the same key demographic for both sports, for wrestling, for football, and the WWE is really going to have to bring it, and I think they're going to have to utilize the FCW guys, especially Chris Hero. I just can't bring myself to call him his FCW name. Brody Lee, some of the others, the Rotunda Boys. They're going to have to bring them in. They're going to have to put them in strong programs, and they're going to have to showcase them at some point during that three-hour period to get people to tune in, to get people to watch, and to get people to pay attention. As for TNA moving up to 8 o'clock on Thursday nights and going live, which we're going to talk about a little bit more here in just a minute, I think it's a good thing for TNA. But, again, they may get a quarter hour here and there against the NFL, especially during halftime. But wrestling is not going to do well against football. Not on Monday, not on Thursday. It's just not going to happen. And there's some games on Sunday nights that actually can hurt a pay-per-view. So they're really going to have to step up the booking. They're going to have to push the guys that need pushed, and they're going to have to really bring the storylines and make people want to care about what they're seeing on Monday night and on Thursday night.
It's going to be real interesting because, as I was noting earlier, Raw has really been struggling in terms of ratings. They're really down this year overall, especially in the last few weeks. And typically a Raw on a three-hour edition does poorly because the first hour does a very low hourly rating. Now, obviously, once they go weekly to a three-hour format, people have to get used to that 8 o'clock start time. But I think initially they're gonna suffer until people get used to. I mean, we've been watching, you know, Raw at 9 o'clock for a long time, and all of a sudden they're saying, you know, tune in at 8 o'clock. So it's going to be an adjustment period for a lot of us to, you know, that earlier start time. Also, it kind of makes you scratch your head and think, what's going to happen now with SmackDown? They've been talking about, you know, adding more Tuesday night live TV events for SmackDown. Will SmackDown eventually move nights? Is SmackDown going to move to a Tuesday night format? Could they really do, you know, live Monday Night Raw and then back-to-back, you know, with SmackDown? Because if they do a live format with Raw, then, they could do a live format with SmackDown the next night. Now, the question would be, you know, would fans want to watch 3 hours of Raw on one night and SmackDown the next night? And then, of course, you still have Impact during the week. I don't know, Jerry. That seems like a lot of programming, and I guess the thought would be, is SmackDown in trouble? Is there a possibility they would try to phase SmackDown out, or do you see SmackDown really remaining the B show, but maybe in a different format or a different night?
One of the possibilities is making SmackDown almost into an FCW showcase and moving some of the people from SmackDown back to Raw to help fill that third hour on Mondays. I don't see SmackDown being live on Tuesday all the time. It's just not cost-effective. You brought up the ratings a couple of different times. There's so much more that goes into those numbers than just the bottom line, just a two-point this, a three-point that. You have to break it down quarter hours. You have to look at the key demographics, the average age of the consumer that's watching it. I mean, there's so much more where, you know, you might have a 2.9 rating. That might be, you know, a very good rating if you're hitting your key demographics and it's nothing to worry about, you know, whereas, you know, you want a 3.4 overall or a 4.0 overall. Of course, everybody does. But there's so much more to the ratings than just the bottom line number. And a lot of people don't understand that. And that rating number gets misinterpreted a lot. There's a lot of research that goes into those ratings. And for Joe Common Guy, you just don't understand it. And if you just look at one facet of it, you're going to be misinformed. So I don't really think Raw is hurting in the ratings per se. I don't think it's where they want it to be. But I think where the demographic is concerned, they're hitting the numbers that they want to see there. Those are the people that are loyal to the product. They buy the merchandise. They come out to the house shows, and they're faithful to the show. And I don't think that's going to change when they go to a three-hour format. I think you're going to find that those people, once they get used to it, they're going to be a big part of watching Raw. As for SmackDown, I think it's a novelty idea to have a live show once in a while, especially as a build toward a major pay-per-view. Keeping it on Thursday night is probably the best way to go and probably the most cost-effective. Shareholders are not happy. They're not making as much as what they could. Raw is eating a lot of bad money, and they're putting a lot more money into the film division and other projects. So I don't see them making SmackDown on Tuesday night a live show all the time. It's just not real cost effective for them.
I think you make valid points in terms of ratings. Of course, the overall rating number has been down in recent weeks. Really, this year, they've been struggling to get over 3.0 for the overall rating. But you make good points in terms of, you know, you can't just look at what the number is overall, if it's 3.0 or 3.1 or 3.3. In fact, I don't know if you saw the little tirade that Dana White did on Dave Meltzer. Dave Meltzer was very critical of the last UFC on Fox number in terms of the overall viewership was down like 50%. But when you analyze the numbers, as Dana was talking about, that the viewership for that particular night was way down, that they hit the key demographics. They were strong with, you know, 18 to 39, and that their median age was 39, where shows they were losing to, the median age was like 55. So obviously they were hitting their target audience.
Right. The 55 and older is not really their market. They want that 18 to 34, you know, and 35 and up demographic, because they're the people that they spend the money, you know, they have the disposable income. And that's the people that you want to watch the product. I'm a big UFC fan from the inception of the company, but the last couple of shows on Fox I have not watched because there has not been a match presented by UFC that I've really been interested in seeing. And there are far too many decisions going on right now, and I don't know if that's just because fighters are less willing to take more chances, if they're being too cautious, or if there's really starting to be a lot more parity in the weight divisions. But for whatever reason, there are far too many decisions, and there are far too many bad decisions when it goes to the judges. And I think that's part of the reason some of the people are tuning it out. I don't think I bought a UFC pay-per-view since the last Brock Lesnar debacle against Alistair Overeem. So, and they're having a lot of issues, you know, with some of their heavyweights and the drug issues, the drug testing, the Diaz fiasco, the Alistair Overeem fiasco. So they're having some issues there that they really need to address. But, you know, the ratings, they are what they are. And if you just bottom line it and look at that 2.9 number, 3.0 number, you know, that's might be bad for the WWE, but, you know, a 2.1 number is really good for somebody like TNA because they're hitting their target audience. So you have to look at it a lot deeper than just the bottom line number.
And obviously, USA is happy with the Raw numbers. Obviously, they wouldn't give them a third hour if they were not happy with the numbers. Obviously, Raw still is above the average rating for a USA Network show. So obviously, you know, they would put a CSI or something in that slot. It would do, you know, a far less number than Raw, even though Raw's overall ratings numbers have struggled. But I think you kind of hit on something there with the Fox number with UFC and that their numbers are down. Obviously, when they debuted on Fox, they had the Velasquez Dos Santos championship fight. That's a heck of a way to debut on network television.
And it was a farce. I mean, that was awful.
You
had almost a 59-minute build for a less than a minute fight, and that was horrible. And I think that may have turned people off right away. You presented what should have been a pay-per-view fight of the year fight, and it lasted, you know, what, a minute, a little more? That was awful.
And I think you're seeing now, with UFC in particular, I just think UFC is way overexposed. I mean, they're always on Fuel. They're always on FX. They have the Ultimate Fighter. They're running their pay-per-views every month, sometimes two pay-per-views in a month. I just think they're overexposed, and I don't think they have the talent roster to really be able to put on, you know, headline main events for a lot of these shows, which I think you were seeing, like, the Ultimate Fighter numbers. You know, they're struggling to get 1 million viewers per week for that show. And I think you kind of speak to the fact that, you know, Raw's going to be on for 3 hours every week. I don't know if Raw really has a talent roster. I feel like sometimes they don't really have the talent roster to run Raw and SmackDown, you know, 2 hours each week. And now all of a sudden you have a 3-hour Raw with your SmackDown. That's 5 hours of, you know, first run television. Plus, again, NXT and Superstars, which of course are different shows, different formats. But again, that's 7 hours of television you're producing. And then, you know, at the end of the month, yeah, buy our, you know, our pay-per-view for $55 or whatever it is in high definition. I just don't know at this point if they have the talent roster, especially on top. I think they really lack a lot of tops drawing superstars to be able to pull that off. And I guess that speaks to what you were talking about earlier, bringing up some of the FCW guys and really trying to make the next generation of superstars.
Well, they are thin where their roster's concerned, and I really think it's time for FCW to put up or shut up. They have not produced one single star out of that developmental system since its inception. OVW, when they were the WWE developmental program, I mean, they produce star after star after star after star, and not only in the WWE, but they also produced a number of stars in TNA while they were transitioning out of the WWE developmental, or maybe while they were still there. But I mean, they produce stars out of OVW and main event stars. No one from SCW has gone and really made an impact in the WWE. So it's time for them to step up now. And they need these guys in SCW to really rise to the occasion and put them over the top, especially going with a three-hour format and 2 hours to fill with SmackDown. Superstars next. I mean, none of that. It's all irrelevant. It's just, you know, filler. But the main shows, they really need these guys to bring their A game and showcase what they've learned. And they really have to get the creative on board and make these guys stars. And Triple H needs to keep his ego in check. And they need to have some of the older guys, Kane and you know, if The Undertaker works anybody, really make these guys come up and elevate them to the next level. Otherwise, they're really going to flounder over the next few months. And I think viewers may very well fall by the wayside a little bit for them. They really have a lot to prove, and they really need to get away from the PG thing. It's starting to, I think it's run its course. Nobody wants to see that anymore. They want to see something a little bit more edgy. And it seems like the more Vince McMahon has let Triple H and Stephanie run the show, it's kind of lost a little bit of its luster. I know Vince is kind of ensconced in helping Linda with her Senate campaign, which I think is a distraction for the WWE as a whole. And I'll be glad when that's over with and she loses so that they can concentrate more on wrestling and the WWE.
What's your thoughts? I know a lot of people's first reaction when they heard the news that Raw was expanding to 3 hours on a weekly basis was to compare it with what WCW did with Nitro when they went to 3 hours. Because obviously it was not a success for them overall. And of course, you know, they were starting to, heading into a negative situation overall with what's going on with their talent backstage and everything. But for those that will say, you know, they had a model to look at WCW, it didn't work for Nitro, so why do it for WWE?
I think Nitro going to 3 hours was more ego-driven by the people, the powers that be there, whereas the WWE is more of a necessity. They need to get more people watching the show. They need to create more viewers. They need to elevate people. And it's kind of difficult to elevate anybody and still get all the major programs over in a two-hour time period, especially when you open the show with a 15-minute interview that really could have been done in about 5 minutes. And I'm speaking of the Triple H thing with Paul Heyman and all of that mess. And then Triple H repeated himself a lot. I mean, cut out some of that. Cut that first interview down to about 7.5 minutes. Get something out in the ring. And that's where you need to start bringing in some of the undercard talent, some of the mid-card talent. Get that U.S. belt off of Santino Marella. Get rid of the goofiness. Get rid of that. Get rid of Brodus Clay and his crap. And really start taking it back to being wrestling, not a comedy show. And I think they'll do a lot better if they focus on what their foundation was many years ago, and that was the wrestling and the good promos that got the matches over. Not all this comedy crap for the little kids, because they're not spending any money.
One thing that'll be interesting, you brought it up there, you know, with the long segments they have, some of the backstage stuff, the long promos, the always the 15-minute opener to start up Raw. That probably won't change into a three-hour format, but the one thing that would be the lengths of the matches, because we typically see, you know, a two-minute Divas match or a 4 or 5 minute singles match or a tag match or a U.S. Championship match. now maybe with that extra time, maybe they can actually let the women and men actually have, you know, matches where they can actually tell a story in the ring.
Well, as far as the divas, there's maybe three on that roster that can actually go. Other than that, any more than 2 minutes and they're exposed, and not in a good way. So I really hope that they don't start trying to run 7, 10, 12-minute diva matches. That'll just be awful TV. Nobody wants to see that. But, you know, as far as some of the mid-card guys, they need more time, because they can actually put together a decent match if they're given the time. And you certainly don't want to bring out your top-level guys and run a 3 or 4 minute match, or especially a squash, and really make them look bad, because then nobody's going to care about the long-term programming for them, and they're not going to take it seriously. So the creative team really needs to be on their A-game when it comes to this three-hour show. Otherwise, just nobody's going to tune in except for maybe a few quarter hours when they know something big and impactful is going to happen.
Now, another aspect, too, when I heard this announcement was maybe the future of pay-per-views. Now, obviously, they run, you know, 14, 15, 16 pay-per-views a year, depending on the year, with the extra, you know, B pay-per-views thrown in. Sometimes there's two pay-per-views per month. Perhaps now that they go to a three-hour format for Raw Weekly, do you think there's a possibility that maybe they eliminate some of the B pay-per-views and maybe stick to maybe a strict schedule of 12 pay-per-views per year?
Well, I think it's possible that they're hoping to get the WWE Network launched sometime before the end of the year, and there was talk that they would move some of those pay-per-views to the WWE Network, including some of the A pay-per-views. Now, I think it's very possible that some of the B pay-per-views may go to the WWE Network if and when it is launched. Maybe one of the A pay-per-views. So I think by doing that, if they can make the WWE Network even semi-successful, they're going to save a ton of money by not running those pay-per-views through on-demand and all of that. And it's very possible, you know, that they'll make more by moving those pay-per-views to the WWE Network in the long run than what they would by having them on demand. So that's always a possibility. I mean, Dixie Carter wants to cut back the TNA pay-per-views. She thinks 12 is too many. And from a production standpoint, even on a small scale, a pay-per-view will run you $450,000 to $750,000 just in production cost alone. And every month, TNA is losing money on their pay-per-views because they don't get the buys to get them back. Now, the same can't be said for the WWE because they're not going to, you know, they get 125,000, 130,000 buys. They're not going to be losing money. They may not make a whole hell of a lot, but they're not going to lose it either. So just in production cost alone, the WWE, by scaling back on the number of pay-per-views and maybe moving some of them to the WWE Network, they're going to save millions over the course of the year. And they can put that money into a better developmental system, because the one that they have now just does not seem to be working.
You know, in terms of pay-per-views, you were mentioning that a possibility they could move one of the A pay-per-views to the WWE Network whenever that launches, which is supposed to be this fall, supposedly later this fall. But we'll see. Again, you know, they were targeting April 1st as their initial date, and of course that's not going to happen. It's long past that. But if they were to move an A pay-per-view, it'd be really interesting, because I think the only one they could really move to A pay-per-view would probably be Survivor Series. And I think obviously Royal Rumble still draws. It's still a pay-per-view that has that luster, that name appeal. Obviously, you know, whoever wins goes on to WrestleMania. I don't see them putting WrestleMania itself on pay-per-view, especially now that they just had 1.3 million buys. I can't imagine they'd put SummerSlam on the WWE Network. So the only one I could really see, Jerry, from those A-lists would probably be the Survivor Series.
There was talk that they could move SummerSlam. There was talk that was quickly dismissed about moving WrestleMania, but I mean, it's possible they could move SummerSlam and Survivor Series to the WWE Network. But there's also the possibility that they could replace one of those with a different pay-per-view, too, in order to offset moving those two major pay-per-views to the WWE Network. If it launches, and in a way I hope it does, I'm a big fan of classic wrestling, and I know McMahon has the largest library ever, and I would really like to see some of the matches that's in that library from back in the 60s and 70s, even the early 80s, before the national expansion of the WWE. So I would probably be one of the foolish that would subscribe to it just for that purpose. And being able to see a couple of pay-per-views on the WWE Network would make it worth that $12 to $15 a month that you're supposed to put out to get the channel. So we'll have to see what happens. There's still a lot of planning and thought process going into it. I would be surprised if it launches by the end of the year. There's still a lot of hiccups that need to be addressed with it, and I don't know how quickly they're moving on that. From what I hear, it's slow and steady progress, but I don't think they're where they want to be right now with the launch of the WWE Network.
Yeah, I think I'd probably be a sucker, too. There's a lot of, classic WWE superstars, with Vince and Jesse that I'd like to see again. The Wrestling Challenge with Gorilla and Bobby the Brain, of course, Primetime Wrestling. The Bobby Heenan Show, even though that didn't last for very long, I'd love to see some of that stuff again. Well, they would probably sucker me in, at least initially, to see what it was all about. Of course, a lot of it depends on how they program it and how they format it and what they offer. The old classic Saturday Night's Main Events would be something to watch again. Obviously, some of the classic Raws, and of course, they have the WCW library. You can see all the WCW pay-per-views and Nitros and Thunders again. Now, one guy just predicted, of course, it's not a prediction that nobody's never made before, but I just saw Sean Waltman say he predicted by the end of the decade that Vince McMahon would own the TNA library as well.
Yeah, I don't know that I would believe too much of what Sean says. I think maybe that hep C's traveled from his liver to his brain and is kind of eating away there a little bit. He's kind of in another place that is not safe for anybody who's lucid. And I don't think I would believe too much of what he has to say. There's a lot of people that have put the death knell on TNA, and at times I have done so. No one can predict the future, but I think if TNA makes the right changes and they start moving in a positive direction, I think they'll be around for a little while, and I don't think Vince will get that library anytime soon, maybe not even in his lifetime. Eventually, sure, anything is possible. I could say that. I could say that Vince could own the ROH library at some point in time. Anything is possible. But I really don't think I would take anything that Sean Waltman says unless I had a grain of salt to go with it.
Well, you were talking about the ROH library, and if they keep running pay-per-views that nobody can see, yeah, I could see Vince owning that one pretty quickly.
Yeah. They're having some issues. Even some of the hardcore faithful, they're starting to turn their backs on them. A lot of people are saying the product is stale, and, they're bragging about a million people watching the show. They're beating TNA in some markets. They're looking to expand the marketplace. They're looking to go into HD. They're even considering going back to running live pay-per-views, actually on air through on-demand type pay-per-views, which at this point would probably be disastrous. But from what I understand, that's in the planning stages, and it's something further down the line. I think they need to get a fresh product out there. All the wrestlers in ROH are basically the same. It's a very vanilla product. The storylines aren't really anything that anybody cares for unless they're in a specific market. And even some people, longtime supporters of Jim Cornette, are now saying that he is out of touch with what the wrestling public wants. So I think ROH needs to do some house cleaning, and they need to make people really start to care about the product. But the first thing they need to do is make sure that the iPay-per-view problem is fixed post-haste and without any more issues or excuses, because I just don't think anybody is going to buy into another debacle where it comes to their iPay-per-view offerings.
Now, I've seen a lot of the comment boards, even the ROH diehards are like, I can't keep plunking down the money if I'm not going to see the show, and a lot of frustration on that last pay-per-view. So, yeah, they really got to get that ironed out before they, go offer another iPay-per-view for people to see. So,
one more thing about that. I mean, thing people really need to realize is that the internet is a fickle product. Even here in my home, I have two separate modems, and I have one that goes out constantly while the other one stays on all the time. And there's no rhyme or reason as to why, because they're both out of the same junction. So the internet is not a perfect science. Running an iPay-per-view is not going to be a perfect science. There's going to be hiccups and there's going to be problems. But to the degree that ROH is having them is probably stretching it a bit. But, I mean, you do have to give ROH a little bit of slack on it, because they cannot control what the internet does at some times.
Yeah, I personally, I've never ordered an internet pay-per-view. It just never interests me. I don't like to watch things on my computer. That's why I have a 55-inch TV. I want to watch something on my television. I don't want to, for me, I spend a lot of time, obviously, with the website on my computer, so I don't want to, train my eyes to watch a three-hour pay-per-view. And, of course, the thing that always worries me about those internet pay-per-views is, what if it's streaming, that, it has to catch up, buffering, and then if you ever watch anything, internet, and it buffers, and then it catches up to where it was, that you may have lost a few moments in that match, and it could be the key moment of the match, something happens that, you come back live and you're like, okay, now what just happened? What did I miss? So
happens on YouTube, especially during peak hours, some things will stream on YouTube and then it'll stop and it'll have to, reload. So, people need to give ROH just a little bit of slack on it, because not all of it is their fault. Some of it, sure, they didn't anticipate the demand as well as they should, but even then, I'm not sure that would have really helped solve the problem for them.
Right. Let's move on to TNA. Obviously, not to be outdone today with the news, and they both really almost broke at the same time. I guess John Cena tweeted that we're all be moving to a three-hour format, and then within a short period of time, Dixie put out the announcement that Impact is going to be moving. Of course, they're going to be moving May 31st, which actually is 2 weeks from this recording. They're going to be moving to their 8 to 10 format on Thursday nights. And that starting this summer, Jerry, they're actually going to do live Impacts. And it says through the summer, so I guess this is going to be an experimental situation where they kind of see if this improves the ratings, improves if the product can, in a live format, can improve the ratings. So your thoughts on, I guess, Impact moving to 8 o'clock and then going live.
I think the 8 o'clock move is a good thing. I've been harping for months about TNA moving to a live show, and I have said at least do a live show as the go-home before the pay-per-view. So somebody there is listening. Somebody with some brains and some moxie is listening to what I have to say. I think it's a good move for them. People are not going to watch what they already know is going to happen. It's like if you go and see the Avengers and you come back and you tell me how it ends, I'm not going to want to see it. So when they tape on Monday or Tuesday, those results hit the net. Nobody's going to watch it on Thursday. I don't watch it on Thursday. And the times that I have tuned it in, I've seen things on there that made me shudder. I've seen Rob Van Dam punches that look absolutely horrible. Mr. Anderson is looking old as can be. I don't want to watch something that I already know how it's going to end. So I think moving it to a live format moving it up an hour where they really don't have as much competition, I think it's going to help them. And I really hope it does, because this may be the one and only time in my life where I might have to say I was wrong, because I've always said I'm not always right, but I'm never wrong. And for 43 years, I've been able to live by that. And if they cannot increase the viewership, then this might be the one time where I have to back off of that and say I was actually wrong. But I think it'll be a good thing for them. You take the time to announce the matches through whatever media you can, Monday through Thursday, and then boom, Thursday night, you present one of the tightest, best shows that you can provide that's not a pay-per-view. And you do it live, and you do it right. And as far as bringing in, the Garrett Bischoff thing, it needs to go away. Now they have Brooke Hogan in there. God, it's got to stop somewhere. Nobody cares about Sting anymore. His time was over 20 years ago. Nobody cares about Hulk Hogan anymore. His is a self-serving prophecy in TNA right now. Eric Bischoff, nobody's cared about for 30 years since he was mowing Vern Gagne's grass. So they really need to exclude those people, get them out of the picture, or at least put them in the background as much as they can. Start bringing in some of these guys from OVW that are ready. There are several right now that are chomping at the bit to come and make a difference in TNA. And I believe that with the stars that OVW has created for the WWE, they can do the same thing for TNA if they bring them in and they use them properly. And that's where TNA needs to go next.
It's interesting because they've only got a couple of guys under contract at OVW, including like Rob Terry that's down there wrestling for Louisville. But one thing I thought was interesting, I listened to the King Mo TNA Spike TV Bellator conference call, and Kevin Kay, who was the president of Spike, was also on the conference call. And he said an interesting comment that I don't think a lot of people picked up on. He said that, you know, we fund TNA and we fund Bellator. So obviously they're sinking money into this experiment with going to the live format. And obviously they're giving them a prime time slot at 8 o'clock instead of 9 o'clock. So it should, at least on the surface, increase their viewership overall. You know, we've been seeing them, you know, going back to the ratings numbers, we've been seeing them really struggle, you know, maintaining a 1.0 rating. And now they're going to be on at 8 o'clock on Thursday night's live format. I agree with Jerry completely that, you know, when they tape, especially when they tape two or three editions in advance, that, you know, the spoilers are out there for weeks and people can go back and check them and see what the results of the matches are. So, you know, why am I tuning in to watch this show? And, you know, a lot of times you look at the results and you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is the stuff they're actually taping. This is the stuff they actually expect me to tune in on a Thursday night to see. But, you know, you throw that out the window, you have a live format and somebody could show up that you're not expecting that could possibly tease a little bit of the old Monday night wars where, you know, one guy could jump from show to show. We've seen the ability of TNA to hire former WWE superstars. And I know, Jerry, I've already heard rumors that for the first show when they go live, remember when they did the show January 4th show when they were moving to I think it was the first live Impact they did, where they brought in Hulk Hogan, they brought in Ric Flair. They had a lot of Jeff. I think that was with Jeff, but that's when Jeff Hardy, I think, showed up on as well. So they had brought in a lot of name value from the other company. So there's already a tease that maybe they could bring in a John Morrison or a Molina. It would mean nothing.
They will mean nothing. John Morrison was nothing in the WWE. He's going to be nothing in TNA. He's a mid-carder at best. He's not going to bring anybody to watch the show. Neither's Molina. King Mo, I'm not impressed with him. He's a Bobby Lashley. Bobby Lashley can't wrestle. He can't do MMA. King Mo, he can't do MMA because he tested dirty. He wasn't very good in MMA when he got tested. He's not going to do very well for TNA where it comes to ratings. They need to take the money that they're wasting on these people or considering wasting on these people, and they need to put it in to fresh product and build superstars. It's going to take some time, but you have a tool, a perfect tool to build with right now, and that's that TV title being held by D-Von. I do not buy D-Von as a singles competitor. I don't buy Bully Ray as a singles competitor. Now, I've kind of changed my tune a little bit on Storm and Rude. not so much Rude, but Storm is really coming into his own as a single, and he's more believable. Rude, he's just kind of there. He's not the man that's going to pop the buys on the pay-per-view. He's not the man that's going to pop the rating on Impact. They need to get the title off of him, and they need to put it on somebody to carry it for a while. That man may be Jeff Hardy again, because he's admittedly the most over and the most popular. So put it on his back for a while. But they're just going to waste money by bringing in John Morrison, Melina. That's just a waste. And they need to stop the comedy crap with ODB and Eric Young, because that's kind of run its course. And again, if wrestling matters, then let's get back to wrestling and stop the comedy crap. Make it mean something. I mean, one of the best angles ever was in Georgia Championship Wrestling when Ronnie Garvin was chasing Jake Roberts for the television title. And at any given moment, that television title was more important than the U.S. title, especially on TV. And Garvin was getting down to his last opportunity to wrestle Roberts for that belt. And Roberts said he had to put up $10,000. And Garvin said, I had to mortgage my mama's house and blah, blah, blah. The angle was over. It was a great angle. And it was for a mid-card title. But it really drew people in. And if they had somebody with half a brain booking this show, get that belt off of Devon, put it on somebody that's fresh out of somewhere, and have somebody chase for it and really turn that into a great angle and start taking these guys from OVW and moving them to the next level. But get Devon out of that singles thing. I mean, he's a, you know, a good wrestler. I'm not going to say too much about their training academy, because the guys that go through there obviously need more work. He really needs to be back with Bubba. I'm not buying the whole Bully Ray, Cavzilla idiocy. They need to get those two back, because they are really weak in the tag team division, and they need to do something to shore that up, because tag team wrestling can be very exciting and very important. It can headline a pay-per-view on an off night where you don't have a decent world heavyweight championship match. You can move a hot tag team program into the main event, and people will pop the buy to watch it. So they really need to shore up the tag team division. They need to take that television title and make it mean something. They need to get some competition there for Austin Aries and that X Division title. Kevin Nash buried that whole division. They really need to rebuild it. It was something that was somewhat unique to TNA, and he destroyed it. And they need to rebuild it. And it will take time, but it can be done. But it has to be done smartly. And the key word is smartly. And if you let Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff lead that charge, you're not doing it very smartly.
What's your overall projections for Impact when it moves to the 8-10 format? And obviously, you know, when they made the announcement they were going to move to 8-10, there was certainly a lot of hopes that they would improve the ratings. Now we know this summer they're going to be in a live format. What do you see? Do you think they ultimately will beat that, you know, that 1.3 barrier that they always kind of build up towards and then kind of fall back on? Do you think they finally go over and maybe peak beyond that 1.3 barrier?
I think eventually. I'm not sure starting out right out of the gate that they will. I think it'll probably be consistent until people start seeing that it's fresh, and, you know, that they realize that they're not going to see this or know what's going to happen beforehand, and they start getting some fresh angles in there, some good booking. So I think it'll be a gradual increase at first, but I think there's a real possibility to get over that 1.3 barrier, get up into the 1.5s, 1.6s before it's all said and done.
You know, I was mentioning that we listened in on the King Mo press conference, and of course it was led by Kevin Kay, the president of Spike Television. I couldn't help but think, you know, in today's day and age of wrestling MMA, that Spike TV has TNA because they no longer have WWE, and now they're going to have Bellator because they don't have UFC anymore. So to me, you know, just listening to that conference call and talking about money invested in the two products, and obviously I'd be absolutely surprised if Spike TV didn't put up at least some money for King Mo's for his deal. So isn't it kind of ironic that Spike TV kind of has the number two wrestling promotion by default and the number two MMA promotion by default?
Well, Spike is they have the most to lose by this. Because of what they're investing in these products. Bellator is good. It's a different format. They have some good fights. Nothing that the mainstream MMA fan is going to follow, but the hardcore MMA junkies, they're going to know what the score is, and they're going to know the fights to watch. King Mo, I mean, when I first saw him a couple of times in Strikeforce, he was impressive, but then he was exposed when he moved up in competition, and then he tests dirty. So there's been a lot of confidence lost in what he can bring, and I honestly do not think he's going to bring anything to Bellator, and he's not going to bring anything to TNA. And I can see, Spike wanting to do the crossover promotions and things like that to try and shore up some ratings and to guarantee people are going to watch. And it's a smart thing to do, but it seems like a foolish ride on a tandem bike with King Mo. I just don't have a lot of confidence that the guy is going to bring anything worthwhile to either promotion. And there was some talk, that TNA was talking to Bitchtista, and that would be a major mistake. Nobody cares about Bitchtista. He's a prima donna, and he's not all that good in the ring. So he's not going to bring anything either. And what are you going to do with him when you bring him in there? I mean, really.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, there's been this TNA tirade, I guess, on Twitter between Scott Steiner, and finally we've seen Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff kind of half-heartedly reply to it. And there's, Steiner's talking that he got sent a letter from Eric Bischoff and Hulk Hogan to that they're taking his comments very seriously. So I don't know, Jerry, do you ever see this possibly ending up being an angle on Impact?
Never say never. A lot of what Scott Steiner has said it's true. So they can't really argue that. Hogan, it seems to me, has tried to take the high road in this and be more political than Eric Bischoff. I mean, Eric Bischoff has sunk to the same level as Scott Steiner, and that's never a good thing. Steiner's revelations about Bischoff and his wife during the trial of the Gold Club, that's not news. Anybody that follows wrestling knew what those allegations were that Steiner supposedly let out of the bag on Twitter. Anything is possible. They're not really disputing what Scott says. They're just kind of coming back at him with some off-color, off-handed comments, some really poor promo work by Eric Bischoff and via Twitter. So I don't know what's going to come of it. It sure sounds like Steiner is disgruntled, though I'm not sure why, since he had a successful go and ring a king. But as far as Hogan and Bischoff, I mean, they mean nothing to TNA at this point, and it's kind of wasted money. I mean, when Hogan gets huge amounts of money every time he's on camera, Bischoff gets piggyback money. I'd really like to know what's going on with Ric Flair and TNA right now, with him no-showing some house shows and the gut check thing. There's some bad blood brewing there. So Dixie has some messes to clean up, and I really think she needs to get out of mark mode and start talking to people that are more interested in serving the company than serving themselves.
Yeah, it's baffling to me why they continue to, sink money into Sting and Hogan and Flair and Bischoff. I mean, the relevancy is just not there in 2012. They just, they don't draw pay-per-view numbers. They don't draw, TV numbers, ratings numbers. So I can't believe that obviously Hulk Hogan is out there front and center now, and we are always seeing Eric Bischoff, and now, of course, with Garrett Bischoff, and and so on. And it's interesting, obviously, we just heard that Ric Flair's daughter, you would think, would sign with TNA. Now she's signing with WWE, so they're going a different direction there. But it's just baffling to me that they continue to sink money and time in investments that's not going to pay off. And I know a lot of people are starting to wonder if the Scott Steiner thing is kind of a work, so that eventually it leads to something on television. But again, I mean, do we want to see Steiner versus Hogan? I know I don't.
I don't either. I don't want to see Steiner versus anybody. He's another one. His time is done. He had his go. He made his money. Now just move on, and let's elevate some other people. I think TNA is relying too heavily on the old-timers, and their time is gone. And everybody that they have on the roster has pretty much worked a program with everybody else at this point. There's nothing fresh about the product. That's where they need to draw on OVW. And I know a lot of people are going to say, well, you're biased, Jerry. You were in OVW, blah, blah, blah. Well, of course I am. But OVW, they create superstars. And that track record is unabashed. Nobody can sit here and say that they have not created superstars. I mean, Lesnar came out of OVW, ODB, Tara, Randy Orton, John Cena. I mean, there's so many people that have come out of there that have gone
Kurt
on
Angle
to be main eventers, to pop pay-per-view numbers. So for TNA to not use some of the current crop in OVW is suicide. So they really need to start doing a better job of bringing people in and elevating them so that they have fresh matchups that people want to see. And a lot of that's with creative and the booking, but they need to get them in there. They need to get people familiar with them, and then they need to start rising them up the ladder a little bit so that people want to see fresh new matchups. That's where they need to go. That's the direction they need to take. Quit worrying about Hulk Hogan. Garrett Bischoff is never going to get over. He's a waste. Everybody talked about, oh, how tough he was for the beating he took at lockdown and blah, blah, blah. Well, that's not a beating. The beating that John Cena took with Brock Lesnar, that was a beating. And that showed a lot of moxie from John Cena. And a lot of people have newfound respect for John Cena because of the beating he took. Nobody has that respect for Garrett Bischoff. And Bischoff is cursed because of who his father is, and nobody takes Eric Bischoff seriously anymore.
That's for sure. Speaking of something stale, was this video that popped up, the sex tape with Hulk Hogan. I don't know if, obviously we don't know all the details, but who is the rumored girl in that tape?
The person that is supposed to be the willing participant for the Hulkster is Heather Klim. Bubba the Love Sponge ex-wife. They were divorced back in February, I think. I reported this quite some time ago. The Dirty.com website reported it quite a while ago. Now the National Enquirer has come out with a story on this saying that it's Heather Klim. And from what I understand, Hulk Hogan and his attorney, they have not confirmed nor denied who it is, but they have gone on record as saying they know who this person is after Hogan saying he was unaware of who this was in the tape with him. I spoke via email with Nick Ritchie, the owner of TheDirty.com. There was some controversy regarding him and Hulk Hogan and Hogan's attorneys about the pictures that were posted on there. Hogan and his attorneys wanted the pictures removed. Ritchie said he wasn't going to. I asked what the status was of that, and Mr. Ritchie said that Hogan and his attorneys had backed down, the pictures were going to stay. So from all indications, from the looks of the background, the room that they were in, it's all very similar to other pictures that were produced of Bubba the Love Sponge's home. My guess is that it's Heather Klim, and it's rumored that Bubba liked to share her with some of his more important friends. Not just including Hulk Hogan, or not just Hulk Hogan, but including other people. I guess this was just Hogan's turn. Hogan stayed with Bubba for quite some time after Linda threw him out. And even though Hogan said that this happened during a wild time when he was post-separation or post-divorce from Linda and pre-marriage to Jennifer, I believe that's his new wife's name, anybody in the know in wrestling knows that Hogan's harem was not fictionalized. He had a woman in every town that he went to when he was touring. So for him to come out and say that the affairs that he had that brought Linda and him to a close where their marriage is concerned is kind of outrageous, at least by the people in wrestling. And again, this is alleged that he had this harem so that, you know, you and I don't get sued. But it's just...
Allegedly.
Yeah, allegedly. that's a journalist's best friend right there, that word.
There you go.
But, you know... My take is, and just from seeing the pictures that I've seen of Bubba's house and of Heather and then of Hogan in this setting, it's Heather Klim.
Isn't that interesting, too, because you're talking that Bubba would, you know, I guess this won't affect it. If this is the case where Bubba is sharing his wife with his friends, I guess that won't really affect his relationship because, of course, we – occasionally hear you know, Hogan pop up on Bubba the Love Sponge radio show, but isn't it kind of interesting that you know, he hangs out with Bubba, that cheers his wife, and of course one of his close friends in wrestling, Eric Bischoff, was kind of known for that back in the day of sharing his wife as well.
Yeah, but Eric mostly shared his wife with other women. I haven't heard too much about him having threesomes with other guys. Most of it was with other women, and they had a penchant for strippers, allegedly. So I don't know. I mean, it's rumored that Hogan tried to share Linda quite often, and sometimes she allegedly took the bait, other times she didn't. It's kind of a strange thing. A lot of people thought that the whole Hulk Hogan-Linda Bonilla divorce was a work, and now she has broken up with her boy toy. And when she apologized to Hulk Hogan for the slanderous statements that she made, she said she missed him. There were some just really strange things that she said in that apology. She even called him the Hulkster. I don't know, you know, my ex-wives don't call me the worm, so
they
call me some other things that, you know, I can't repeat here, but that's neither here nor there. But it certainly seems like she may be having second thoughts, but it may be too late since he's remarried. But again, this is wrestling. This is Hulk Hogan, so that marriage may not mean as much. So who knows? You may see a reconciliation between Linda and Hogan before long.
Boy, if Hulk was known for sharing his wife, they could have really had some real interesting episodes of Hogan Knows Best.
There you go. I mean, he could have some Eric Bischoff stories to tell of his own there. You know, Linda and Jennifer and Hogan all get together, and hell, maybe invite over Heather and Eric and Eric's wife and Bubba, and hell, throw the Honky Tonk Man in there since he has much love for all of them.
Well, maybe they can bring back Hogan Knows Best 2, you know, a reunion show, and because, you know, we've seen so much has happened to the Hogan since that show went off the air. So
that's something else, man. But yeah, I don't know.
As we wrap up, Jerry, any thoughts on Sunday's pay-per-view, Over the Limit? I think you probably have the same expectation that I do. Not looking forward to this pay-per-view, and really not looking forward to seeing Mr. Laurinaitis in the ring.
I think it's gonna suck. It's a throwaway, as you said earlier. I don't want to see John Laurinaitis against John Cena. It's not going to make me spend my hard-earned money for it. I'm kind of on the fence about getting it right now. I want to bring it to the people and give them my entertaining and enlightening views on it. But at this point, unless something major happens between now and Sunday, I may just pass this one and I may find a stream online. You never know. A lot of people are going that way now, and I just don't know. I don't have really great expectations for it. I honestly think it'll probably pull one of the lowest pay-per-view buys of the season for the WWE. It's just not all that interesting.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And of course, if you're not gonna order the pay-per-view, obviously you can check out our live coverage at Gerwick.net. But wow, we got a chance to cover a lot of great topics tonight. Hopefully, with the changes coming up here with Raw and Impact, hopefully it increases the interest in professional wrestling, because I think we've definitely seen in recent years that it's definitely kind of waned off the interest in pro wrestling. So we'll see, Jerry, overall, if this summer, I guess really, you know, we're going to see, you know, Impact Live and, you know, Raw 3 hours every week, if this really does have a impact on pro wrestling.
I'd really like to see Impact do well. I think they have the ability to do it. I just think they need to be smart about it. I'm really a fan of Impact. I like the players. They just need some fresh ideas, some fresh matchups, and I don't think going live will hurt them. It may not pay off in the short term, but I think overall it should help them, and it might increase their pay-per-views a little bit, get them out of that 17,000 to 20,000 slump that they seem to be in, and start getting them into a little bit more profitability. I mean, losing $46 million in a year, that's almost a death knell for any company. $60 million was what sunk WCW. I really don't want to see TNA get to that point, so we'll see what happens. But I think this is a positive step, and it's a step in the right direction.
Well, we shall see, because before you know it, we'll be having live Impacts to cover, and obviously 3 hours of Raw to cover every week. So expect a lot of new matches, a lot of new characters. It should be a very interesting summer, all things you know, added up. So, Jerry, we thank you for your time tonight. Give us a chance to you know, talk about all the current issues in professional wrestling. We could go into more, but we'll wrap it up here right now. And, Jerry, thank you so much. We do appreciate you coming on with us.
Always a pleasure, Steve. I'm available anytime you need me, brother.